The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated. This morning, the court has two matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are Northern County Mutual Insurance Company versus Davalos from Matagorda County and the 13th Appellate District, and Fort Worth Osteopathic Hospital versus Tara and Donnie Bruce from Tarrant County and the 2nd Appellate District. The court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral arguments. Petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of arguments. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court, and if you would like to purchase a tape of any argument, you may do so by making application with the clerk. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Northern County Mutual versus Davalos.
May it please the court, Mr. George Langford will present argument to petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes.
May it please the court. We are here today on cross motions for summary judgment that were ruled against my client in the trial court. The Court of Appeals had a split decision 2-1 against my client, which brings us here on a coverage issue, duty to defend in an automobile insurance policy. Two predominant issues before the court is, number one, in a duty to defend situation on a liability policy, if the carrier tenders a defense without attempting to reserve any coverage defenses, can the insured or policyholder still reject that tender and still expect to have coverage for the defense? And then secondly, whether Article 21.55 of the Texas Insurance Code applies to a duty to defend situation. And in that discussion will actually be the third issue which has been presented, and that is, if there is a 21.55 application to a duty to defend, has Northern County fulfilled the time requirements under the statute? I think the single most key important fact in this case that I believe everything turns on is that Northern County, when it was faced with a request for a defense, sent a letter to the insurer indicating that they have an attorney who is ready to provide a defense. We recognize you have already hired an attorney and you have already filed an answer in the suit. They are not the attorney of our choice. We want our attorney. Furthermore, we want to choose the venue of the defense of your case. Never attempted to raise any coverage issues or preserve them. And on the face of that, the policyholder turned it down and took two letters to fully explain that. And that is the main reason why I've offered the court the handouts to look at, because those are the four operative letters that I believe control this. The first letter being the December 26, 1996 letter from one of the two policyholder lawyers to the insurance company that basically says, here's the lawsuit, don't file an answer until you talk to my other attorney who is already preparing to file an answer.
Let me ask you a question. That the respondent's brief cites one case, and I didn't see any briefing other than this one case. What happens in situations where there's a car accident and each side claims, and let's say there are egregious injuries, and both sides see one another saying you're at fault, and the plaintiff, one of the plaintiffs is you're insured. What do you do in that situation? What's the defense? What is a liability policy issuer's obligation to defend in that situation? Does the plaintiff have to give up their third-party their claims against the other party? How does that work?
Certainly, you've hit to the core of what that issue is about. this is, and I think it's important to focus on, this is an insurance policy. It is a contract that the parties have agreed to bound themselves
to. Well, does the plaintiff have to make an election? Does the plaintiff have to say, does the insured have to say, no, I've decided I want to be a plaintiff and I'm going to forego demanding a defense? Or how does, or is there some way to split it up? How do, what does the case law say, both in Texas and other states, on what the insured's obligation to defend is?
I believe, number one, the cases are clear. There is an obligation to defend, to tender a defense. What I have not seen resolved anywhere, which I believe is why we're here, is because no case has directly dealt with that conflicting situation where the insured wants to prosecute its case in another form, and the carrier wants to defend it in a form that is more favorable.
Forget form.
She's talking about a case where everything's in there, and your best defense is that this was an act of God, so nobody was at fault. But your client may stand the opportunity to win millions of dollars by showing the other side was at fault, just as a for instance.
Or both drivers say the other was horribly negligent, and
right.
But they're both, and they're suing each other. So where, what's the your obligation to defend under those circumstances?
I mean, our obligation is to tender a defense if the insured will accept it.
And if the insured accepts it, does the insured have to give up their claims as a plaintiff if you decide to settle? If you decide to say, we're going to pay money to the other side to make this all go away, which would make the plaintiff's claims go away, your insured's claims as a plaintiff go away, what are the respective rights and obligations?
The carrier has the absolute right to settle anytime it wants to. In fact, in these types of policies, since you're focused on automobile policies, which this case is about,
do you have any case law that deals with this situation, either in Texas
or
in other states?
Conflicting claims, no, I have not seen any. I think that's important because of the conflicting issues that the insured or the policyholder have the ability to make the choice. It's his choice as to whether he wants to have the protection of knowing he has coverage by accepting the defense that the carrier has tendered, or if he wants to pursue his claim in another form, then he has the option and the ability and the power to decide, I want to go to the other form, and so I will give up the protection of coverage. But I think the key point is that decision was not made by the carrier, but the carrier has the right to insist on having complete and exclusive control, I believe is the phrase that this court has used, in defense when there is no question of coverage.
So you think the word conflict, as we've used it in our cases, is only conflict over coverage, not conflict over what might be the best overall result for the insurer?
Yes, Your Honor. And I haven't seen a case from this court that has ever dealt with the issue where the conflict was described in any other way other than coverage. And that's important because I don't think you could find a case anywhere where a theoretical conflict could not come up where the insured wants to handle the case differently, wants a different trial strategy. And that completely eviscerates the whole concept of having control of the defense if the ability to control the defense is always trumped by the insured wanting a different defense but still insisting on wanting to have the defense paid for and having full coverage when there's no coverage question. Just think that if the rule that this court comes down with, that the policyholder in those types of situations has the control and the option to decide whether to preserve coverage by turning over control to the carrier or rejecting coverage and taking control, that is the best policy decision this court could make because, again, the decision always remains with the policyholder what he wants to do. If he decides to preserve coverage by taking the defense from the carrier, then he is further protected by a bad defense strategy of the defense lawyer, he has a malpractice action. I believe that's what Traver has said. If the carrier fails to settle and expose the policyholder to an excess judgment, then the carrier can be held liable under Stowers. So the insurer is protected and has control of his fate, and yet the contractual rights that were bargained for by the insurance carrier at the beginning of the policy of wanting to have control of the defense is also preserved and respected. And I believe in a situation where a suit has been filed and the carrier and the policyholder are trying to quickly decide what they want to do, a bright line test offers the easiest guidelines to them on what to do, rather than trying to analyze, well, what's reasonable under the circumstances. A reasonableness standard will merely throw more questions to more courts to decide what's reasonable and what's not reasonable under the situation, and really provides little guidance to the people who are basically in the pit having to make the decision when the suit's been filed and someone needs to follow an answer.
Mr. Lankford, you said previously that conflict is used in our cases, you believe, only means conflict over coverage. And you believe there's no conflict over coverage here. You think the intermediate appellate court made a mistake there, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe that's also why the one justice...
In your letter, January 9, 1997, one of the letters that you submitted, on page 2, the second full sentence reads, if they continue to defend you in the Dallas County lawsuit and continue to pursue the motion to transfer venue, we will take the position that there is no liability protection under the Northern County Mutual Insurance Company policy issued to you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does that sentence bring into play coverage? Does it say, in essence, that if you continue, insured, to follow the strategy you're following regarding venue, that we're going to take away coverage?
I think it's saying, Your Honor, that the reality is if you will not accept our defense, then we can't defend you, that there, in effect, is no coverage because you're not respecting our right to control the defense.
So your client conditioned coverage on strategy decision, is that correct?
I don't believe that constitutes a conditional defense, Your Honor. That is not a conditional defense. In case law, has always construed it in terms of is there coverage under the insuring agreement or is there an exclusion or a condition that would forfeit coverage. But the basic question of will you accept the defense that we are offering, I don't think that's a coverage question. That's the client, the policyholder, deciding I don't want coverage. I want to control my fate.
Well, what if this was a Stowers type situation? In other words, I assume here there was no question that the damages were going to be well within the policy limits, whatever they were. But what if this situation where you have a $100,000 policy and it's clear that the damages are $1 million if the client loses? Then does the client have any say over venue or other trial strategy questions, or is their choice merely to send a Stowers letter and hope that you can get it settled within that amount, and if they can't, then they just have to choose your venue and they either have to abandon your level of coverage altogether or choose to go with your trial decisions and pay the rest of the money?
Their protection under what this court has held in Stowers is exactly what you said.
So if there's no demand, but the plaintiff has made no demand, and they're looking at a possible $1 million verdict, and you've got $100,000 of coverage, and you insist on trying it in a venue that they think is going to jack up those excess damages for them. But the plaintiff's made no demand within policy limits. They're stuck with your decision about venue and trial strategy.
They're not stuck with their decision.
Or they have to let you go. I mean, let's suppose your trial strategy is a roll the dice strategy.
Yes.
You're going to try a very aggressive attack on the other party that's either going to win with the jury or it's going to inflame passions.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally your decision, and they just have to live with that. If they don't like, since there's no dispute over coverage, if they don't like that strategy of rolling the dice, and either you get off scot-free or you pay your maximum and leave them with huge excess, then they have to forego all coverage and defend themselves.
Actually, the result wouldn't have been all that different if they had moved the venue. They still would have been exposed to
but
a potential
But I'm right. I mean, you believe that's the case. I mean, even what I said, you don't have any disagreement with.
No, you're all right.
You got $100,000 of coverage, you're entitled to call the shots for how that case is defended. And if the strategy you want to use leaves them risk for excess, that's they can have a lawyer there in a second, sort of in a second chair or advisory role, but yeah. That's what they get under the policy.
And the reality, I think, in today's world is there would be a settlement demand within policy limits to trigger that Stowers.
Well, they might or might not. They may have assets.
If a plaintiff wanted to be sure to try to cover as much as what potential exposure was, he would want to be sure and get the insurance company on the books.
You can't always buy that. You can't always get insurance up to the money.
I believe that under the cases and not only in the agreement of the parties that there is a right to control the defense. It must mean something, or the right means absolutely nothing.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Mark Tyser will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, good morning. We appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you today, and I want to talk to you about what this case is not about that keeps getting argued over and over, and that is that there is no breach of any cooperation by my client, Mr. Davalos, none whatsoever. Their own representative says, and I quote, "No, there was coverage available to him. Did Mr. Davalos ever do anything to negate coverage? Answer, no. And would your answers be the same for Mrs. Davalos? That's correct. And did their lawyers ever do anything to negate coverage? Answer, no."
Are you saying that's a binding admission?
I think that is an absolute binding admission. He is their representative. He is the person that wrote the letter that Mr. Langford has given you, the letters that are in front of you. He's the one that explains what his letters mean, Your Honor. I would like, if I could, I want to digress.
So just why didn't you just move for...
I'm sorry?
Why didn't you move for a directed verdict as soon as he...
Well, actually, I moved for summary judgment. This is summary judgment, so we did move for summary judgment, Your Honor. I'd like to answer, if I could, Justice Owens' question, which I thought was an outstanding question. What does a plaintiff have to give up to get his defense is kind of what I understood the question to be, and I hope that's correct. And the answer is nothing to get their defense, absolutely nothing. And there is some case law that this court has decided. It's old case law. But it's a case called Automobile Underwriters versus Long, 63 Southwest 2nd, 356, and I'm reading from page 359. And I grant you, this is not a case that's right on the facts, but it does say, the quote says, "When an insurance company contracts to defend suits against the insured, it is bound in good faith to perform this obligation and has no right to insist upon the insured signing away his rights as a condition precedent to the performance of this duty." Now, what we're really talking about here is what you wrote, Justice Phillips, in Traver, is primarily the duty to accept or reject settlement offers. That's primarily the control of the defense. And where no conflicts exist, they may make other decisions. I think the language was purposely used conflicts and not limited to conflicts of coverage.
What we talk about conflicts, what if I don't like the counsel that my insurance company has chosen and I demand that I have another counsel? Isn't that a conflict?
It could be, Your Honor. It depends on the nature of the circumstances. You have to examine each case individually.
Now, and I say I don't like the expert witness that you've hired. I want you to hire somebody else. Or I don't think you've taken enough depositions. I want you to take 10 more. These are strategy calls at some point.
And that is why that we have an independent lawyer assigned to defend the case that makes is entitled to make those strategic decisions on behalf of the client in the best interest of the client. That's what we talk about in ethics opinion.
So you're saying anytime that the insured is unhappy with the insurance company's defense, the strategy calls, the insurance company is obligated to hire an independent counsel?
No, Your Honor. They are obligated to hire a independent counsel that is to defend the insured under the duty to defend. That's their obligation.
But who ultimately gets to make the strategy calls? The independent counsel or the insurance company?
Oh, I think absolutely the lawyer does, and I think Traver's very clear about that.
Whose lawyer?
The lawyer that represents the insured gets to make those decisions in conjunction with his client. And the reason that we know that is we look to Traver and we look to Ethics Opinion 533. Ethics.
The insurance company hires you.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're acting independently and you make these decisions.
Yes.
And the insured says, I don't like what Mr. Tyser's doing. I want somebody else. Now, what's the insurance company's, and the insurance company's not pulling the strings. The lawyer, you're giving your best independent advice. Hired by, paid for by the insurance company to the insurer. And the insurer says, I don't like your advice.
I think it has to be a material conflict. Just because you don't like me, I don't believe is a material conflict.
I don't like your strategy calls. Okay. I want you to take more positions. I don't like the way, I don't like the experts you've chosen.
I think that could be a material conflict, Your Honor, and you have to examine the circumstances. And what I want to get to is this Ethics Opinion 533, which talks about, you know, insurance companies and these billing guidelines and telling the insurance, the defense lawyer or the lawyer defending the insured, what he can or can't do, whether you get to take this deposition, whether you get to hire this expert, whether a paralegal performs this kind of a task or not. Those are decisions that are left to the professional judgment of the lawyer. Strategy and professional judgment, to me, are almost, if not the same, are synonymous. It's their tactics. Their tactics. And in this case, it's even larger than that. What gets lost in this case is we have a lawsuit. We sue the other driver and the insurance, or what we believe to be the insurance company, in Matagorda County. For violations of the policy and failing to take care of some policy benefits that we're entitled to. There's a conflict right there, right off the bat. We are adverse to them in another venue. And then they step in and they say, you know what, we want to control this other lawsuit, even though there is a material conflict already there. That's why they admit that there is a material conflict.
Well, going back to my basic question, let's suppose you have two people hit each other in two automobiles, and each says the other is grossly negligent and sues the other. What do their respective liability carriers have to do? I mean, does the insurer have to make an election? And what does the duty? What happens to the right to control the litigation and the right to settle under those circumstances?
I don't believe the insured has to make an election.
What if the insurance company's lawyer says, look, I think it's 51% that we're going to get tagged for $1 million, and in my professional judgment, this case should be settled. Does the insurance company have the right to settle under those circumstances?
Absolutely, and that's not what this case is about.
I'm just asking about the law. And so if they have the right to settle,
that means they
have the right to cut off the plaintiff's, your claims against the other side.
They won't cut off our claims. There's case law that says they cannot, by settling with the other side, they cannot.
I'd like to see those cases.
Okay, the prejudice. That is a case called Hurley.
You cited on page 19. Are there any other cases in Texas or any other jurisdiction?
There is a case, I believe, a federal case, Your Honor, and I'll be glad to send a letter to you and tell you what those are. There's a couple of cases, I think, that are federal cases that also talk about that, and there may be one other Texas case, but I think the Hurley case really goes to the heart of it, that they cannot cut off my client's claim by settling. That's not an issue in this case.
No, I'm just trying to find out what's everybody's respective rights and obligations and duties. And so what's the function of the insurance defense lawyer in that circumstance? He can't settle the case. Your independent lawyer, as your plaintiff's lawyer, is making the calls. What's the function of the defense insurance company's defense lawyer?
The function that, well, I don't know if you mean this or not, but it's not the insurance company's lawyer.
The one they're paying for.
Right, the one they're paying for. Okay. The function of him is to defend those claims against the insured and to take no action that would be adverse to any claims that the insured might have. Okay? It is no different. than the plaintiff's lawyer, me, defending Mr. Davalos. I'm going to do the same thing. The only difference is their scope of representation is limited. They cannot prosecute the affirmative claims on behalf of the insured. That's typically left to me as I say the plaintiff's lawyer. But they have to defend, and they cannot take, I believe, any action adverse. Now, there's going to be strategic decisions made. There may be some disagreement about those decisions. But by and large, that defense lawyer is going to act in the best interest of his client, taking into account all of the circumstances in regard to that claim. Have I answered your question?
Well, what about the language in the policy about they have the right to settle at their option? And they disagree with you. They think that you're going to lose, and they're going to get that your client, your mutual client, is going to get hit with significant damages. Who has the right to decide to settle or not?
Insurance company does. That's not an issue here. That is absolutely not an issue in this case. Their right to settle, we did not interfere with their right to settle. We did nothing. We vigorously defended Mr. Davalos and the claims brought against him. They have a right to settle, and they did. That does not prejudice my client's claims by settling. It does prejudice my client's claim when they're trying to manufacture or trying to get venue in another county.
How does it not settle, resolve? I mean, if you settle with the other side and you get a release, how can you pursue your clause of action against the plaintiff, the other side?
Well, actually, I think the Hurley case deals with that, and I also think there's a number of other cases. The insurance company doesn't prejudice my client.
Your Matagorda County suit against the other drivers over, I assume, because the underlying litigation got tapped.
No, Your Honor, absolutely
not.
And
who was the release from?
The release would only release the other side's claims against my client. It does not affect my counterclaim or my original claim, my claim of dominant jurisdiction to the other side.
Well,
it does not.
I'm curious about.
I'm concerned
how
I haven't answered the question.
Go ahead.
Have I answered the question?
No, but go ahead.
All right.
I'm curious as to how you were harmed in the situation as it actually came to pass. I mean, you're in Matagorda County suing as a plaintiff, and you're still there. And had the insurance, I mean, if the insurance company comes in and settles the case in Dallas County, it just goes away, and you stay as plaintiff versus defendant, whereas what you seem to want was cross claims in Matagorda County, which, I mean, just strategically, I don't know why you're better off having somebody pointing the finger at you as opposed to not having them pointed at you. It's just a clean suit. You're the plaintiff.
Your Honor, our lawsuit was the first filed lawsuit. It was the dominant lawsuit.
And still is there? It's the only lawsuit.
Well, actually, what happened to it is when Mr. Askins filed an affidavit that the trial court determined was fraudulent, they transferred our case to Dallas County. The Dallas County court, for all practical purposes, abated that lawsuit until such time as the lawsuit down in Matagorda County on a change of venue that the insurance company Charter, who they represented to be the insurance company at the time, filed a motion to transfer venue. They filed an affidavit by Mr. Askins. He said Charter was the insurance agency, or it was the insurance company. He represented they didn't have any agent under the venue and all under 15012 and all of that, that they didn't qualify. The court accepted that affidavit and transferred the case. We subsequently learned two things. Number one, that Northern County is in fact the insurance company, even though they've sworn that it was Charter. And number two, had we sued the right insurance company down there, it never would have been transferred because they tried the same tactic when we sued them on the breach of the duty to defend. So there was harm. And more importantly, I don't think either side disagrees that the choice of venue has the possibility to affect the outcome of the case, maybe in the amount of damages, maybe in the amount of liability. For us, our client lived, operated in Matagorda County. Some of the witnesses were in Matagorda County. He made a contract of insurance with.
For the part of the case that's before us.
Yes.
And this whole thing with Charter, it doesn't seem to me is really before us.
At
this stage. It is, tell me.
Only in the sense of the background of the case, Your Honor. Only in the sense of the background of the case.
But on the legal decision we've got to make, I can't see how a client is worse off by not having a claim against them than they are by having a claim against them. Well, now, I understand how you could be worse off if you had substantial chance of excess exposure and why you would be vitally interested in the venue in that case. But if this part of the case can go away, why do you care where and how it goes away?
Because it didn't initially go away, Your Honor. It didn't initially go away. We filed our lawsuit. They filed the second lawsuit about 4 months later. Northern County did not come in and settle this case until 10 months later. So for 10 months, there was another lawsuit pending. There was issues of collateral estoppel, res judicata, race to the courthouse. It was a pending lawsuit against my client. So for 10 months, it made a lot of difference. It made a whole bunch of difference that we were already there. We were the dominant case. It wasn't a case where they came in and said, you know what, you won't let us defend it, so we're just going to settle the case. That's not what happened here. And that's part of, you know, in the Court of Appeals, they argued, gee, we had the right to settle or defend, and we settled, so you don't get any defense costs.
So what you're saying, if you chose Matagorda first for this dispute, and then the opposing party took its claim to Dallas, your insurer insists on trying it in Dallas, and it gets to trial first, that you say the factual resolutions up there would be res judicata of your original Matagorda suit?
It would be. It would force us at that time to elect to make a counterclaim in that lawsuit if those issues were actually tried to a verdict. And that is why the venue was important to us.
And that's why I understand, once that case was settled, why didn't that make your claims against the other side go away? What does the settlement say?
The settlement says that there's the resolution of a doubtful and disputed claim. They paid them money, and the people that sued Mr. Davalos were paid, and it doesn't affect any resolution.
So he can turn around and sue them now?
Mr. Davalos could?
Yes.
Well, yes, he had sued them before he ever...
But so that release doesn't affect his lawsuit against them?
Absolutely not. I've done not a very good job of explaining this, and I hope I want to explain this.
How did two people who were suing each other settle only one side of it? I mean, I don't understand.
It happens all the time. For instance, let's just say you and I were involved in a lawsuit. You sued me first, and then I sued you. And we're both defended by our insurance carriers in an automobile accident. And they said, well, we like Justice Owens' claim a lot better than Mr. Tyson's claim. We're going to pay her $50,000 to settle. Your claims are gone, but my claims against you still proceed because there's been no resolution of those claims other than by settlement, which is not an adjudication on the merits. A settlement is not an adjudication on the merits.
What if it was impossible to settle without settling both sides? What if the insurer said, I can settle this claim against my insured, but only if we can settle the claims going both directions? In this case, given your client's contract insurance policy, would the insurer have had the right to do that? Where the contract language says we will settle or defend as we consider appropriate any claim or suit?
Only subject to the reasonableness of a Stowers type analysis, Justice Wainwright. Only subject to a reasonableness of a Stowers type analysis. And as I hear your question, I don't hear that it's a Stowers type claim. I believe they could do that. I've never seen an insurance company ever condition, we'll pay you if you pay us, and we'll wipe each other out. It's never been done. I suppose it would be a nice way of settling cases, if I understand your question correctly.
Well, I didn't posit that in my question. Normally the parties, in deciding whether to settle, will look at the claims against each other and perhaps perform some type of offset analysis and say, maybe your claim's worth $1 million, you've got a counterclaim against me, I'll deduct $200,000 perhaps and settle for $800,000. Didn't necessarily have to involve both sides paying something to the other side. And that's just one possible example. But
yes.
Let's assume that the whole case has to settle for settlement to happen. Could your client's insurer have done that under his policy?
Who's making that condition? We're making the condition, or the insurance company's making the condition?
The parties.
the parties, well, I think that the insurance companies involved in that decision, I think they have the right to control settlement. That's what Traver says. I think they can do that. I don't think we can impose that condition on the insurance company on a right to settle. We've never said that. That's not what this case is about, is settlement. It is about control of the defense.
Question is, what if you can't settle part of the case, you have to settle the whole case? The other side won't settle unless you settle it all. Then does the defendant, the insurer, make that decision or not? That's the question.
I'm not sure I understand the circumstances of how that would be about. I'm not trying
plaintiff
to...
Plaintiff sues the defendant, defendant counterclaims. Plaintiff says to the defendant, we'll settle for, the insurer says, we'll settle for $50,000. The other side says, well, but your claim against us. As the defendant said, I'm not going to settle unless we settle the whole case. See, that surely is typical.
I think so, and I think.
And then
I think
who makes that decision?
That's well, I think the. I'm not sure I still follow you, but if I do, I think the insurance company would be in. Are there two insurance companies involved?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I think the insurance company can make those kind of decisions so long as it doesn't prejudice any claim that their insured has. And the other insurance company, so long as it doesn't prejudice any claims that the their insured has, I believe they can make that. But if they try to do that and force a settlement and force the plaintiff and defendant to settle with each other on the affirmative claims, I do not believe they can.
But is it a breach of your client's duty to assist? I mean, well, you're the insurance carrier for the moment. Well, both of you are. I mean, your client has insurance, I assume. I don't know from this record what I know in the case, but let's assume in this case each side had insurance and there was no question about who the insurer was. Get rid of all this complicated factors. And you can settle your client's liability to the other side for $50,000. But the other side doesn't want them. They want $75,000. And your client, that it's going to be the insurance company's decisions on both of them. As long as it's within the policy limits, it's their call at all, both ways. So the clients are never going to be able to interfere. It would only be if it goes above the level of coverage. Isn't that right?
Well, only if it goes to if I understand your question, only if it goes to the level above the level of coverage, then we got a conflict on what you talked about, Stowers.
But if they each have $100,000 of insurance, both of these parties are in an accident, and both sides can settle within $100,000, neither client's going to have any say over it.
As to the insurance companies paying the other side, that is correct. They will have on their own
on whether they accept, right? So does your client have an obligation to accept damages that he thinks are low if it will discharge your duty, if it discharges your duty? And if he doesn't do that, then you're going to remain on the hook and have to go to trial. He has that right, I gather. If the other insurance company says it, and Judge Wainwright and Judge Hicks hypothetical, they're not going to sell unless the whole case goes away. Your client has control up to that extent.
If I understood the correct question, and that was the question, yes, my client has control. The important thing here is on the breach of the cooperation, you know, is what was the harm? They said there was no prejudice for anything we did, and if they're saying that we breached the cooperation clause by not turning over the defense, okay, so what? There was no prejudice, and therefore there was no breach. It's no different than if I'm sued, I don't turn in the lawsuit for 6 months, nothing happens on the lawsuit for 6 months, and I give it to the insurance company, and I say, hey, here's this lawsuit. They go, wait a minute, 6 months? How long have you been sitting on this? We said, well, about 6 months, nothing really going on in the case. They go, we're not going to defend because you didn't promptly send us the papers or assist us. That won't work in Texas because you have to show prejudice. So you got a prejudice analysis here that has to be taken into account. That's what this court has said. For a breach of the cooperation clause, you got to show prejudice. And if breach of cooperation is only two things this court's ever said, and that is number one, imposing liability on the insurer, never happened here, and number two, did the insurer lose a viable defense by something the insurer did? Not at issue here. So there's no breach. they were obliged to defend. I'm sorry we didn't get to the 2155 because there's a lot of people on my side that are very interested. I appreciate that.
It's a good question, but we have to get over this first hurdle.
Yes, you do. I agree. Under Bonner, you absolutely do.
Well, I'm not. This may be very simplistic, but the better strategy decision on the defense side is to be in Dallas. The better strategy decision on the plaintiff side is to be in Matagorda. What's the insurer's duty? I mean,
well, I think
that's what I'm struggling with.
Okay. That may be true for the insurer, but the part of the equation that's missing is the lawyer representing the insured, and it's his judgment along with his client that controls, not what the insurance company wants. Okay.
Well, but let's just presume that the lawyer that the insurance company is paying to defend the insured says we're going to be better off in a defense mode in Dallas. Plaintiff on affirmative claim is better off in Matagorda. What is the insurer's duty then? I mean, I don't know what the insurer is supposed to do, because if it gets moved to Matagorda and that prejudices the defense, where are they left?
I don't believe it can prejudice the defense as a matter of law under the cases this court has held that a venue decision is a breach of cooperation. Now, if you want to talk about maybe a Stowers-type claim where you could really show that venue really made the difference.
But what I'm saying, though, is that they're conditioning their defense.
Absolutely.
Because that's a strategy choice that they will better enhance the defense to be in Dallas. So they're doing what they think is in the insured's best interest on defending them.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, they're doing, and they want to tell you pretextually, they're doing what they perceive as the insured's best interest. But that's not it. They're doing what's in their best interest because they're a defendant in the lawsuit too, and they are the ones that are conceivably be on the hook. So it's not, you can't take it in pure isolation. If we didn't have any claims against the insurer.
Okay, if the insurer were not in there,
right,
and there were no claims against the insurer, I guess that's the premise of my question. And that's what I'm struggling with in terms of the duty to defend. If you presume, if you will, the defense is better off in Dallas, plaintiff's better off in Matagorda, no suit against the insurance company, what then?
Well,
what's the insurer's duty there?
That is not this case. Okay, but if it was this case, I would say this. You would leave that to the independent judgment, professional judgment, of the lawyer representing the insured in conjunction with the insured. Let the two of them decide what is best. If, for instance, they go to Matagorda County and they stay there and they say, hey, that's a great county, and they get hammered there, okay? Then the insurer looks to the lawyer and says, did you make a bad tactical decision to give me bad advice? Then we're into Traver, okay? On the other hand, the insurance company looks to the defense lawyer and says, did you steer us the wrong way? And then do we have some kind of equitable subrogation type claim or something of that nature for your bad advice? But that's not this case. And respectfully, that's why I wish this court hadn't taken this case, because that is not it. But I could see that's the court is struggling with those issues.
Well, what is the right to control the litigation and the policy if it doesn't mean I get to make the calls?
It means exactly what Justice Phillips says it means. It means they get to it means the right to accept or reject settlement offers and to make other decisions normally vested in the client, assuming no conflict. However, you got to put the caveat to that. You got 504 of the disciplinary code talking about the independence of the lawyer, and 533 of the ethics opinion that says these are professional decisions that are given to the lawyer defending the case. And there's the issue. They do have control whether to settle or not to settle. That is absolutely not an issue in this case.
Well, as you can tell, I mean, we're struggling very hard.
Yeah. And I hope I've answered your question.
To try to put this in general parameters and not within the confines of this case. But let's suppose you have to look at these facts. How did you end up suing? You thought you were suing your own insurance company, and you sued the wrong company.
My local counsel drafted the petition, of which I signed off on. We were led to believe it was Charter. They filed a motion to transfer venue. Mr. Askins filed an affidavit that says, we are the insurer for Tomito Tavalos. We do not have an agent here. They answered interrogatory answers that said that there was no other potential parties. They didn't sign any verified pleading that was
suggested. This is very unusual for a person who's been in an automobile accident to sue their own carrier at the same time they sue the other side.
No, sir. Underinsured.
Surely it was that type of claim.
Underinsured, and there could be violations for misrepresentation of the policy and those type of things. Article 2121 does not limit it, does not preclude suing your own insurance company.
And this is done a lot? You sue your own
done
company?
Done a lot.
You sue your own company in the same petition that you sue the person who ran into it.
It is done with some degree of frequency.
Okay. And
it is a matter of tactics. It is sometimes a matter of tactics. It is sometimes a matter of putting everything together. All one lawsuit, get everybody there, get them bound by the judgment. Not two lawsuits. For instance, if you have a lawsuit where you sue the other party, and then you get a judgment, then you come back and you say, well, now I got to sue my underinsured carrier and do it all over again unless they agree to be bound by the judgment. You can get them all in one lawsuit, and you can typically try that so long as you don't have what we call a Millard or Winborn type deal where you're suing the insurance company for making an inadequate settlement offer. And then you've got issues under Liberty versus Aiken about what comes in and what doesn't, and you might have a severance, or you might have separate trials. But in this case, for a plaintiff's lawyer that's litigating a case, it makes great economic sense to get it all in one case and get all the issues before them.
And so as soon as you do that, you've triggered what you call a conflict, and you deprive the insurance company of control of the defense?
Let me just say this to someone. We ceded control of this case to the insurance company. They're the ones that came back and said, we got a conflict.
We don't want to go to Matagorda County.
And we got a conflict. We don't want to go to Matagorda County. And
but the conflict is one you created by suing them. Is that right?
I suppose it's one that we created. It's one that we had as a matter of right. And make a claim against our insurance company. If we created the conflict, it was easily resolved because they say our motion to transfer venue was defective. So if it was defective and they say it's defective, who cares then? Go ahead and defend the case. What got this case going left instead of right was because they said, you withdraw your motion to transfer venue or we're not going to defend you. That's what made this case head to the left.
They also ask you to withdraw your counsel and substitute in.
Never an issue, Your Honor. Never an issue in this case. Never an issue. The record in this case, that is not the issue. The issue in this case is you withdraw the defense, or you withdraw the motion to transfer venue. Notice they didn't say abate the motion to transfer venue, or we're not going to defend you. And so when they said they were going to do that, that those were the two conditions, what difference did it make whether we signed a motion to substitute or not? They said they wanted to do it. If they really, truly believed that our motion to transfer was defective, take it, run with it, have it overruled. Let's drive on. We did nothing wrong. The motion was defective. The court overruled it. Why didn't they do that? They're the ones that say that. They're the ones that says that we filed a defective motion to transfer venue. There's so many things wrong.
What if the motion to transfer venue were a good motion, and they thought that it would really damage the insurer to be sued in Matagorda County? Don't they have an obligation to fight that? Well, that's the conflict you're talking about.
And that's left to the independent judgment of the lawyer that the insurance company retains, who's representing the insured, and the two of them, in conjunction with each other, make that decision. I'm not saying there aren't difficult decisions to make here, but we're talking about conditioning a very valuable right under the policy on a condition that doesn't exist in the policy. And this is a very narrow set of circumstances here that we're talking about. We're not talking about that, and that's why
even if you're right, let's suppose the Dallas case settled first, it had gone to trial, and you had an adverse judgment that you were involved with, but paid off damages, and that ruined your chance to hit it big in Matagorda County, then that's one situation. But here, none of that happened. I mean, you still, once you got venue straightened out, assuming you did, on Dallas County and got back in Matagorda, you still had everything going your way, didn't you?
I had, by the time they settled this case, I believe that our case had been transferred to Dallas County. And it is very significant, Your Honor, that we had to protect ourselves against collateral estoppel and res judicata. And what would have occurred had it progressed to a trial is we would have made a counterclaim in that other lawsuit and had to litigate it that way, because if a jury arrived at a decision on the Mr. Weinberg suit against us, we would have been bound by the rules of res judicata and or collateral estoppel as to whatever they found. And if we didn't make a claim,
but since it settled, and you didn't have to do that.
No, Your Honor, but all this occurred after we tendered and asked for all of it. All of it occurred.
Where is your lawsuit against Weinberg's today?
They paid us.
But even in Dallas County, if you had to file a counterclaim, you would have had your trial there in Dallas County.
Yes, and we would have lost a very valuable right. What everybody agrees is a valuable right is a right of venue that may have the potential to influence the outcome of
the
proceeding.
Is that just in terms of the jury, or are you talking about location of witnesses, or what? Should we, as a court, look around Texas and say, we agree with you that venue is more favorable here in terms of the jury pool than it is over here?
I don't believe, Your Honor, you have to get to that issue. I think you have to look at that the insurer may refuse to defend unless and until we did something that they wanted us to do, which we believe compromised our claims that had already been filed. I don't believe you have to engage in that broad venue analysis, what's better and what's not. I think that you can limit yourself, and I would encourage the court to limit itself to that issue, to look at and say, we conditioned our defense on the fact that we want you to do something that the policy says we don't have to do.
And compromise your claims specifically?
Compromise our claim because we believe Matagorda was a better venue in terms of plaintiff claims, in terms of where my client lived, the locality, his treating physician, the treating person bringing that doctor live. I got to tell you, in trying cases, it's a whole lot better than putting them up on a video, because I can assure you that to bring a doctor to Dallas on it, you have to drive from Bay City to Houston. That's an hour and a half, and then an hour flight. And he's going to be there all day. And respectfully, our doctor friends want to be compensated as well they should. They're giving up a whole day of their practice. So it's things of that nature. My client's family. It's all those things. Have I answered your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it very much, the time.
May it please the court. Before we leave, I do want to at least to be sure that we address the 2155 issue, in that there is one newer case since the briefing that I wanted to be sure the court was aware of, and it's actually the lower court opinion in Utica National Insurance versus Texas Property and Casualty at 110 Southwestern 3rd, 450. Specifically, page 458, the court there made a ruling that was not evidently not brought up to this court, but in that the court looked at the exact specific issue of, is the duty to defend a claim that falls under Texas Insurance Code 2155, and the court wrote, they said no, and the court wrote, Article 2155 defines a claim as a first-party claim made by insured or policyholder. The associated step into the shoes of ICA as the insurer. Therefore, any claims made by the associates against Utica are third-party claims and do not fall within the statutory definition a first-party claim.
Where in the trial court did you take the position that Article 21, this is a third-party claim that is not covered under Article 2155?
On page 92 of the record, defendant's second motion for summary judgment, where we said that the plaintiffs have alleged, quote, plaintiffs alleged claims other than breach of contract, including Article 21 and Article 2155, should be rejected, not only because the defendant fulfilled its contractual duty, but also because plaintiff has not stated a claim as a matter of law. Admittedly, the research and the briefing on that issue now is much more extensive than it was then, but the issue was raised and was argued.
I've learned from Mr. Tyser that it's apparently not unusual for a party to bring claims against his or her own insurer, bad faith, etc., at the same time you bring the initial negotiations or decision point. You already have this adverse relationship with your own insurer. And when that's the case, doesn't that change the parameters of the duties in a rather fundamental way, more than what we think of just as simple two people in an accident suing each other?
I think, Your Honor, the difficulty comes in situations where an insurance company wants to fulfill its duty to defend, and a creative lawyer can drag in conflicts that basically aren't there to begin with.
But having this suit in Dallas and getting that resolved first might greatly save your client money in terms of the overall exposure. And why isn't, under Traver, this a decision that the independent counsel should make, and not one that's made by the insurance company ab initio before that counsel ever even retained?
I think, Your Honor, the insurance contract charges the carrier with the responsibility of focusing on the defense and the exposure of the client in the lawsuit. And the insurance company is wanting to limit that exposure as much as it can.
But venue is not an insurance company decision. Let's get this real simple.
Yeah.
Is venue an insurance company decision, or is it a counsel decision, the counsel being hired under the doctrines these ethics?
I think it can be an insurance company decision if it's important to the defense of the case. And I believe the Rodriguez case, which is cited in the briefing one of the opinions, and there specifically mentioned that is a valuable right. It will, in many cases, it can determine the outcome of a case. If you take that valuable right away from the carrier, then you, in effect, you have materially affected the ability to defend the case and the exposure of the insurer to an adverse judgment.
What about the argument that that decision should come from the counsel that's assigned to the defendant to make that decision, as opposed to a letter from the insurance company making that strategy choice? That's what I understand to be the complaint.
I understand. Let me try to clarify then. That decision can lie in most situations can lie with that defense lawyer. Just as in the normal lawsuit situation, the lawyer, as this court's recognizing Traver, has the authority to make certain decisions that are involved in how the case runs. But the client always has the ultimate authority of deciding. That may be what you suggest, but I can decide, because I'm the client, it should be something else. And that goes back to why I suggested at the beginning of the argument that the ultimate decision maker should be the insurer as to whether he wants control of the defense or not. If he wants control of the defense,
our question is much simpler, and we have the same question. It's why did the insurance company make a decision that Dallas County was the proper venue before, rather than the lawyer that the insurance company hired for Mr. Davlitz?
Well, I guess the short, the direct short answer to the question is the lawyer the insurance company hired was never allowed to accept the defense of the case. He did not represent Mr. Davalos because Mr. Davalos's lawyers would not allow him to. Because
but
they said,
it was contingent on Dallas County being the venue before he got to, as you say, become their lawyer, wasn't it?
Yes, he wasn't allowed to take control of the case because the company did want to have the venue choice, which...
Why is that venue choice the company's and not the lawyer they hire?
Because in that situation, if the insurance company is going to have a valuable right of being able to defend, then it has to be able to exercise that right of choosing where the defense is going to be.
And is there any case in any American jurisdiction that says that that's a company's right rather than either the insurance right or the independent lawyer's right?
Well, it's a specific case, no, but I think I have to say that recognizing that Traver is a case that is discussing the duties and responsibilities of the attorney. It does not discuss the rights and duties or responsibilities of the insurance carrier. Those are two completely separate issues, which I think is why this court is struggling with this case, because there isn't a case on point with regard to what's the right of the insurance company in that situation. We do know that if an insurance company is tendered a defense and asked to defend, the company has to decide whether to accept the defense or unconditionally, no coverage defenses. If you get hit, we're responsible, or send a reservation of rights, or file a deck action.
Well, and I think their argument is you did not accept it unconditionally. You imposed a condition on accepting it.
I want to be sure that we're not arguing semantics. I agree with you that there was a condition that we want control of the case. As soon as we put a lawyer in place, we're going to withdraw any motion to transfer venue. That's not a coverage condition. All the cases have addressed coverage conditions as that's triggering a conflict of interest on the insurance policy and where our rights emanate from. And that in those situations, then the carrier cannot insist upon control of the defense because, and it's the fear that this court recognized in Tilly that we don't want insurance companies hiring defense lawyers to go in and defend and at the same time either dig up coverage of facts that will destroy coverage or otherwise harm the coverage position. For example, hiring a defense lawyer.
But again, we're back to the definitional point. I realize you're talking semantics, but you say the only condition that can be imposed on the defense obligation would be a coverage condition. And because coverage was not an issue, you did not tender. You tendered an unconditional defense in that sense. But I think since they're arguing condition is you did not accept the defense unless they agreed to waive their venue choice.
Well, let me suggest that maybe it's not semantics or is semantics in that if...
I guess what I'm saying is it begs the question.
Yeah, but I guess the scenario I want to suggest, though, is if Northern County had not sent a letter talking about venue, saying, here's the attorney we want, sign the substitution. They sign the substitution, a new lawyer comes in, and the first thing he does is withdraw the motion to transfer venue.
And at that point,
he would have been an independent lawyer, and if he was actually singing your tune rather than looking at the client's best interest, he could be responsible for that.
And he may have decided, contrary to what Mr. Davalos' lawyer decided, he might have agreed that if my focus is controlling and containing and minimizing your exposure to liability, you're better in Dallas than you are in Medgar County.
Well, he might well have, but that's the question is that from these documents, that appears not to be the case before us. And so the decision we have to make is, does Traver talk about anything other than coverage? Can there be any other type of conflict? And that's really the nub of the legal argument.
Yes. And that issue comes from Tilly, and Tilly was addressing coverage.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first clause. We'll take a brief recess.
All right.